Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but we'll warn you. You'll have to pry it from our cold, dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it. One shot at a time.
Second Amendment Tuesdays with Attorney Penny Dean continues here on Bulldog Live on the Pulse. 1-866-823-1077. Penny, let's take a caller first, shall we?
We shall.
All righty. Jack from Maltonboro, you're on Bulldog Live.
How are you? Good afternoon.
Good to hear from you again.
Yeah, well, I got my voice back. Well, part of it anyway.
All right.
I've been meaning to ask Penny this question for a couple of weeks. You had a client that you were defending. The fellow was arrested in a shopping mall, but it was on the Massachusetts side of the border. They take him to the police station. He has a Massachusetts gun permit, which they then confiscate, charge him with having a pistol without a permit. You speak to the DA. The DA says, oh, yeah, those are the facts, but I'm going to charge him anyway. So here was my question. Isn't that malicious prosecution?
Well, you're asking a really logical question, okay? You want logic or you want reality?
Well, it seems to me if it's a malicious prosecution, he has a civil tort, especially under 1897 of the Federal Code, the Civil Rights Act.
You're talking 42 U.S.C. 1983?
Yes.
Okay. Well, here's the problem. Again, we're talking reality, okay? The courts in that particular case, for example, they not only seized his New Hampshire and his Massachusetts license, they provided it to us in discovery with proof that they had it. And, of course, I filed a motion to dismiss, attached it to that, and said to the judge, Dear Judgey Wudgey, okay? You know, well, I didn't have to say Dear Judgey Wudgey. Dear Judgey Wudgey, here's what the prosecutor gave us. You know, my client swears under oath this is valid, true, you know, issued in his name, wasn't revoked, rescinded, denied, you know, the whole bit. Please dismiss this charge, see this charge. Judgey Wudgey dismisses. Now I call the prosecutor and I say, why take court time? Why make me do this? Why are we doing this? You can file 42 U.S.C. 1983, and I've never done one in that instance, but my read of the case law, okay, is it has to be way worse than that because they dismissed it once they got my motion. So you can talk about those cases, but I'll tell you what, I've seen a lot of those cases where they don't even get past summary judgment. They say this is de minimis, and he faced no harm because he didn't face jeopardy because it was dismissed before we went further in the trial process.
I understand what you're saying, and you have a very strong point there, but it would still seem to me it would be harassment, if nothing else.
Oh, it is harassment. It is absolutely harassment. You know, and the whole thing is it's really, really unnecessary. And relatively speaking, the prosecutor that was handling that case was a relatively decent, as far as prosecutors go, prosecutor, you know. And I was like, why are we doing this? Why are we wasting court time? Why are we doing this? I said to the prosecutor, do you question the validity of this license? Do you believe it was falsely procured? Do you believe it expired? Oh, no. I don't believe any of those things. I said, then why are we doing this? Then why are we doing this? It's just an absolute waste of court time, and it's a waste of whatever. And it's no different in my mind than you have what most of us call throwaway charges, okay? When you see people in the paper, this guy's charged with like 20 charges, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if you actually properly litigated those charges, okay, half of them would go away because they're flat, darn near baseless charges in many instances, okay? But in some case, they've got enough on the person where the person doesn't want to risk trial or whatever, so they'll plead to this one, and in return for pleading to that, they drop all those. Mm-hmm. But when it came to trial, I had a case came out of Nashua, actually. Milford Nashua went to Nashua Hill South, and they charged the guy with resisting arrest two different times and malicious destruction of police property. Now, you know what he did for malicious destruction of property? He was being fingerprinted, and they threw him up against the wall, and he put his hands on the wall to stop his fall, and, of course, the fingerprint ink got on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, is that normal, what you'd call destruction of property?
Well, now they got the evidence. They say, see, yeah, we have his fingerprints all over the wall. He certainly intended to put a big old hole in it.
You should have demanded that you see the evidence in court, bring in part of the wall, cut it out, and bring it in.
Oh, well, no, it was better yet. I said, because my client told me what had happened, and I said, so great. I said, we want a video of the booking area, right? Because you got that video. And once, you know, we had went through, the client went through two jury trials, one for the primary charges, which were criminal threatening, total horse feather charges. Jury found him not guilty. Next was a resisting arrest charge, which was no more resisting arrest than my Aunt Mabel did. Okay. Jury found him not guilty. And they were going to charge him with one more resisting arrest and criminal whatever. And the judge, Judge Groff, who is basically making me very sad, he's retiring. You know, he's basically a decent judge, Judge Groff was retiring, was raising his eyebrows at the prosecutor saying, you've got to be kidding me, you know. And it takes cases like that. It takes judges to basically say in cases that should not be brought. For example, that one she dropped midway through, a year and a half into the process. But those type of cases, what we need are fair and decent prosecutors that don't bring charges like that.
All right, well, Jack and Penny, I got to move on here because time is running tight.
Let me thank everybody for their time, and I'm gone. Okay?
Jack, thank you very much.
All right,
take
have
care.
Have a great day, folks.
All righty. Penny, Matt from Sam Burton wants to join in as well. Go ahead, Matt. You're on with Penny Dean.
How you doing?
We'll have to make this as quickly as possible.
Okay. On regards to the handguns at work, when they say in your employee handbook not to have guns on the premises, is your vehicle considered part of that, or is that private property?
In most cases, they will fire you because the premises is usually defined as all company property. So I tell people two things. Number one, when you're going for a job, if you're in a position and see that, talk to the person interviewing you and say, wait a minute, why do you have this? You know, sometimes you can get people to change their policies. I would discuss them about why they have it. Now, some people are afraid to let them know they carry guns, afraid they won't get a job. But the other thing is, yes, that usually is considered, like, let's say there's a company parking lot. That's usually considered company property. So I have a lot of clients who literally just park on the street two or three blocks away. They find an area nearby where you can park and walk. And if they don't want their fellow employees to know they carry firearms, they just say, you know what, I'm getting a little thick around the middle and I need a good walk. And this is a guaranteed way I make myself walk an extra couple blocks every day. Right? No one knows the difference.
And I know that other states have had to address this issue to allow people to leave their guns in their cars while on the company property. I think Florida is one of those states that recently secured that as well. Well, Matt, I'm out of time for this segment. Thank you very much for your question. It's a very good one.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you too. Penny, we've got to go, but anybody else that has any questions for you, where can they reach you?
230-9999.
230-9999. Now, I have another question, and this is something to ponder. How about if your employer is renting the property, and let's say you're on the third floor of a building, and the company says you're not allowed to have guns on the company property, but yet the parking lot belongs to a landlord? Ooh, that's a good one, isn't it?
Well, it is, but here's the issue. For example, search and seizure rights and everything, your landlord would have exclusive right to that. For example, when you rent an apartment or a house, you have exclusive rights to that apartment or house, right?
Okay.
Okay, so I presume your landlord has exclusive rights to part of that parking lot, right?
I gotcha.
I don't know what his specific contractual agreement with
it. I guess it would come down to that, wouldn't it, too?
It would be, unless, let's say, it's a big public parking lot you all park in downtown.
Okay, gotta go. Thank you very much, Penny. Take care.
Thank you.